Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 11, entitled Swayambhuva Manu Advises Dhruva Maharaj, text number 24. Na cheta putra kabratur antaro dana danugaha visarga dana yustata pumsa devamikaranam. Translation. My dear son, those yakshas who are descendants of Kuvira are not actually the killers of your brother. The birth and death of every living entity are caused by the Supreme, who is certainly the cause of all causes. So eva visvam sijati sa eva vati hanti cha atapya nahankaran najayati gunakarmabhi. Saha, he, eva, certainly, visvam, the universe, sijjati, creates, saha, he, eva, certainly, avati, maintains, hanti, annihilates, cha, also, ata api, moreover, he, certainly, anahankarad, from being without ego, na, not, ajati, becomes entangled, guna, by the modes of material nature, karma be, by activities. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead creates this material world, maintains it, and annihilates it in due course of time. But because he's transcendental to such activities, he's never affected by ego in such action or by the modes of material nature. Purport. In this verse, the word anahankara means without ego. The conditioned soul has a false ego, and as a result of his karma, he gets different types of bodies in this material world. Sometimes he gets the body of a demigod, and he thinks that body to be his identity. Similarly, when he gets the body of a dog, he identifies the self with that body. But for the Supreme Personality of God, there is no such distinction between the body and the soul. Bhagavad Gita therefore certifies that anyone who thinks of Krishna as an ordinary human being is without knowledge of his transcendental nature and is a great fool. The Lord says, Namam karmani limpanti. He's not affected by anything he does because he's never contaminated by the modes of, by the material modes of nature. That we have a material body proves that we are infected by the three material modes of nature. The Lord says to Arjuna, you and I had many births previously, but I remember everything, whereas you do not. That is the difference between the living entity or conditioned soul and the Supreme Soul. The Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has no material body because he has no material body, he's not affected by any work he executes. There are many Mayavadi philosophers who consider that Krishna's body is the effect of a concentration of the material mode of goodness, and they distinguish Krishna's real soul from Krishna's body. The real situation, however, is that the body of the conditioned soul, even if he has a large accumulation of material goodness, is material, whereas Krishna's body is never material. It is transcendental. Krishna has no false ego, for he does not identify himself with the false and temporary body. He is always eternal. He descends to this world in his own original spiritual body. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita as Parambhavam. The words Parambhavam and Divyam are especially significant in understanding Krishna's personality. In the Bhagavad Gita, the consciousness of the living entity who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is analyzed to be of the nature of kshudra. Ksudra means it is small. Ksudratma, a small-minded man. So the materialist gradually becomes absorbed in various objects in the material energy. And the result is that his consciousness begins to center around material things. The example given is the Grihamedi, whose mind is just centering around his family life. Just like the bull that is tied to a wooden bar called Meda is walking in circles to grind grains or to pump water in third world villages. So the Grihamedi is tied to the Meda and is walking in a circle, a small circle of interest, and his whole life centers around that small circle of interest. Transcendentalists are described to be udaradi, to have broader intelligence. Their intelligence is not attached to the temporary material loss and gain, but rather their intelligence is attached to eternal benefit. And whatever comes, dugavat sukavat anyata sukam, kalena sarvatra gabira ramasa, whatever comes in terms of happiness and distress in this material world comes on its own accord. Therefore, the transcendentalist is not making that his main objective. His first objective is eternity. So this concept of seeing things from the eternal perspective is what Swayambhuva Manu is trying to remind Dhruva Maharaj of, because somehow or other the Yakshas had killed his brother. So Dhruva Maharaj then, being a Kshatriya, didn't accept that, and he killed a huge number of Yakshas, and he would have finished them off all, right? Because he was such a powerful Kshatriya that there was no question that the Yakshas could stand a chance. Although we find a description about the fight that it was very fearsome, because these Yakshas these days are actually known as the people of the mountains, such as Tibetans and these kind of people. So it is described that prior to Buddhism, there was another religion in that area called the Burn religion. And that Burn religion was specifically based on mystic powers, all kinds of mystic perfections. And we find that still today in Tibetan Buddhism. And it's not surprising, because we see in Bhagavatam that the Yakshas exactly were preoccupied with these kind of activities, supernatural kind of illusions they were able to create. And therefore, in the fight with the Yakshas, they were fighting with weapons that caused illusions. So it was very difficult to fight such enemies. When one sees mountains coming at him, it is difficult to figure out if they're real or false and so on. But Dhruva Maharaj had also very powerful weapons and was able to counteract the effects of all these mystic weapons. So Dhruva Maharaj was somehow or other killing these various Yakshas, which in a sense is surprising, because Dhruva Maharaj was a pure devotee of the Lord. So in our definitions of a pure devotee, we think there cannot be any anarthas in a pure devotee. How can there be a trace of impurity in the heart of a pure devotee? How can there even be something of the bodily concept of life? Why didn't Dhruva Maharaj immediately see the will of the Lord? My brother has been killed by the will of providence. Right? These Yakshas somehow or other were the instrument, but his time has been completed, because no one in this world dies unless his time has come. There's no such thing as somebody dying out of time. All is going on by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. And the purpose of what a person had to learn and experience in this lifetime, when it has been completed, then it is time to move on. And that has nothing to do with the number of years or with the cause of death and whether someone is being killed by someone else. Rather, that is all predestined and not at all out of order. It seems that we make a distinction between a natural death, which seems to be the natural cause of one's karma, and a death due to being killed by someone. And when someone is killed by someone else, then we feel that his life was prematurely cut off. Right? There is an element of truth in that, right? But on the other hand, from the absolute, from our perspective of the three modes of material nature, there is an element of truth in that. And if a person would have been allowed to live, he could have progressed more. But from a absolute point of view, we cannot see it like that, because we have to see that everything is perfect in this world and operating according to the perfect plan of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, there is no such thing that there's anything wrong when someone leaves this world. Rather, it was destiny. That is the broader view. So it was expected that Dhruva Maharaj would have this broader view. So how is it possible that Dhruva Maharaj, a pure devotee of the Lord, lost this transcendental vision? It is not that when we speak about pure devotees that we have to be so concerned about anarthas. The essential quality in a pure devotee is that he's purely dedicated to devotional service of Krishna. That is pure devotee. And then there, as he is continuing to go on in this pure devotion, he'll get more and more purified. That there may be a trace of the influence of material nature, we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmadi yasya yatum vyaditaratas chate swabhikisvara tene brahma ridaya adhikavye muyanti yat suryaha, that even the demigods are influenced by the illusory energy. And it says in this world, sometimes we see water on land when it's not there. Or water in fire, which is also not there. But we see it. So this is the illusory energy. The illusory energy is very strong, and even the demigods can become bewildered, who otherwise are very, very powerful. So therefore, it may be possible that some trace of material, of influence by the modes of material nature remains within a devotee. Another example we see in Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is totally ecstatic from his very childhood. It is said that in his previous life, Prahlad Maharaj was a person, this is stated by Jiva Goswami, who is quoting from the Skanda Purana, and who is stating that Prahlad Maharaj in his previous life was a sense enjoyer, and that he was keeping some prostitute. Prabhupada said that in the West they say girlfriend, and in India we say prostitute. Anyway, so Prahlad Maharaj at that time with a different name in his previous birth went to the forest and somehow or other came in a deserted temple in the forest. And he was enjoying there, engaging in sexual activity with his, with that lady. But, later they had some disagreement. There was some argument. And, the result was that she walked away from that place, and he stayed alone in that temple, and he was very upset, very, very upset. And therefore, he was fasting. And because he was fasting, he was fasting, and also he couldn't sleep. He couldn't sleep the entire night. So during the night, it became Narsingha Chaturdasi. And at that time, it happened to be a temple of Nrisimhadev, actually, a deserted temple of Lord Nrisimhadev. So he was there on the day of Narsingha Chaturdasi, observing the fast in the temple of Lord Nrisimhadev. And as a result, in the next life, he became a devotee and got the mercy. And while he was in the womb of his mother, Narada Muni instructed his mother, and he heard transcendental knowledge. And then from his early childhood on, he was a great devotee, an extraordinary devotee. And being a great devotee, he was always absorbed in transcendental bliss. And then we hear the whole lila of how Hiranyakasipu tried to kill his son and so on, and how finally Lord Nrisimhadev appears and saves Prahlad. And then we hear how Hiranyakasipu had been ripped to pieces by Nrisimhadev, and many of the demons that tried to attack him after that also were all destroyed. And still the Lord was very angry. And it is said that all the demigods were very, 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 very fearful. It said that no one was going to go near him. In fact, one of the problems with the demigods was that they didn't even recognize him necessarily as the Supreme Lord, because they were considering that maybe he was, they'd never seen this form, and they hadn't read about this form, so they weren't so sure who he was. Yeah. Who was this form? Half man, half lion. What kind of creature was this? So, some didn't know he was the Supreme Lord, some did. Lakshmi Devi knew, but still she was not going near him this time. And Prahlad was pushed forward, as we remember, and Lord Nrisimhadev placed his hand on the head of Prahlad. And it is stated that then Prahlad was purified from whatever contamination was there from his birth in a demoniac family. So it's quite amazing. Yeah. How come Prahlad being purified? Prahlad was like a topmost pure devotee. What contamination? He was in ecstasy. Huh? And Prahlad was meditating on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord while they were trying to pierce him with tridents, while they threw him off the rock, even when they tried to fry him in hot oil. Prahlad was simply meditating on the Lord. What material contamination? So, if there was any material contamination in Prahlad, due to his demoniac birth, it was certainly not a major obstacle, right, in him becoming a great, great devotee of the Lord. Therefore, we can see that pure devotee doesn't necessarily mean 0.0000% of anatta, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that. It means like 100% attachment to Krishna. And whatever influence might be there of the material nature, that pure devotee has no interest to pursue in this world. He has no interest in his own anartas. And Krishna, whatever is there, makes arrangements. It is stated that there are different levels of of topmost devotion. And that in these stages of bhava, some traces of material contamination may remain. For example, it is also stated that the sages of Dandakaranya saw Lord Ramachandra in the forest. Dandakaranya was a forest where Lord Ramachandra passed through. And when these sages saw Lord Ramachandra, they were attracted to the Supreme Lord, and they immediately attained a stage of bhava, it is said. And as they attained that stage of bhava, they immediately developed a desire to have a conjugal relationship with the Supreme Lord. However, Lord Ramachandra was not available for such type of activity. Lord Ramachandra was always adhering to the principles of Dharma, and he had also taken an ekapatni vrata, of a vow to accept only one wife. So, in the next birth, these sages of Dandakaranya became gopis who actually engaged in the rasa dance with Krishna. But it said, because in their previous life they had attained the stage of bhava and not fully attained prema, right? Therefore, they became more purified in the relationship with Krishna, and then developed also that prema. They became purified by associating with the eternal devotees, the Nitya Siddha devotees, the eternal devotees from the spiritual sky. And in this way, they became eligible to also develop Krishna prema. So it is described. So we see many examples how in like extraordinary devotees, topmost devotees, there may be, who are actually counted in the category of pure devotees, there may be some traces of material contamination. Yeah. But these are to be overlooked. It is said, just like the rabbit on the moon. We may not know that there is a rabbit on the moon, but there is, according to the scriptures, a rabbit on the moon. You look, in English to say the spot on the moon. They know there's a spot on the moon, but not everyone knows it's a rabbit. But on a clear full moon night, we can have a good look and actually see that there is a rabbit on the moon. Yeah, so. In this way, artists can paint rabbits on the moon and follow authorized versions of Vedic literatures. So, in this way, one can, but no one, it is said, no one will criticize the moon for the rabbit. The moon is not, the fame of the moon is that the moon rays are very cooling. In India especially, in the hot season, at night, the moon is coming out and the air becomes cooling. Because there are different descriptions of the moon. Anyway, it is said that the moon rays are cooling. The moon has other beneficial influences. So, we are not finding fault with the moon for having a rabbit. And that is the point. So we are not finding fault. The faults are irrelevant. Right? Did the pure devotee make mistakes? Has become quite fashionable now. Some people even dare to go after Srila Prabhupada. But in these scriptures, we are reading that sometimes there are different understandings of the philosophy between the acharyas. For example, Sridhar Swami, the original commentator of Srimad Bhagavatam, is describing that sometimes at the end of the life of Manu, first of all, he states that there are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. A day of Brahma consists of 1,000 Divya Yugas. sahasra yuga paryantam. So it says 1,000 divya yugas, or 1,000 cycles of 4 yugas, make up one day of Brahma, and there are 14 manus. So one manu lives 71 divya yugas, 71 cycles of 4 yugas, a very long period of time. And it is stated by the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami, that sometimes after such a manvantar, such a lifetime of manu has been completed, that there is a dissolution in the universe, that the universe floods. It's at sometimes. But then Srila Jiva Goswami, he produces proof from various scriptures that it's not sometimes, but that it always happens. So how is this possible? And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says he also agrees with that. So how is this possible? One could say, how is this possible? There is a contradiction. So how can there be a contradiction in the parampara? We thought that the truth, we're dealing with the absolute truth, right? No change. No change philosophy, right? How can there be changes like that between Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami? One of them must have actually one of them must have been wrong, right? Cannot be they're both right. One is wrong. And it appears that Sridhar Swami, the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, was wrong. How is this even possible? Right? This is inconceivable. Inconceivable. So, but because we come with our neophyte mentality and our magnifying glass and we are critical fault finders, we think that if there is one fault in someone, he's not pure, then he cannot be a bona fide representative of the Supreme Lord. Who says? Who says? It's not a automatic process. It should not be compared to there is a electric socket and we put in the plug. So if a wire is broken, right, how can the electricity properly flow? Even if the wire is partially broken, it is not functioning 100%. It's functioning, but there is some disturbance in it. So if the acharyas are not like perfect wires, then what is the problem? Then how can the transcendental knowledge come through? This kind of argumentation could be there. But the thing is this, is that Krishna consciousness is not a mechanical process. It is a transcendental process which depends on the mercy of Krishna. And when Krishna is satisfied, then Krishna will reveal transcendental knowledge from within. And that is the point. So the acharyas are not necessarily knowing transcendental knowledge by the strength of their own qualification, but simply because they have satisfied Krishna with their service, Krishna will protect them, Krishna will work through them, Krishna will reveal transcendental knowledge to them. And even if then there is some trace of anatta, anyway, Krishna will still reveal transcendental knowledge to them. And in this way, we can understand that even if there is a trace of impurity left, that we're still dealing with a pure devotee, like Dhruva Maharaj, who had totally pleased the Supreme Lord, and who had no other interest than to please the Supreme Lord, but who somehow or other became angry. He was a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas, they can be angry at injustice. Kshatriyas are not by nature having uncontrolled anger. They're not like people with a hot temper. Right? Although Kshatriyas are a little fiery. Right? Once I was driving in Rajasthan, from Rajasthan to Vrindavan, and in with a Rajput, a member of a royal family in Rajasthan. And on the way, there was a bus who was sort of cutting our car in a bad way. So then, this Rajput, he got so angry, he drove with his car in front of the bus. And then he stood on the brakes, right? And the bus tried to pass him, right? And the bus changed lane, and then he also changed lane. And he stood on the brakes. So the bus had to stop. So then the bus stood still, and he put his car right across the road like that. And then he stepped out of the car and stood in front of the bus driver and said, "So?" and made him come down from the bus, you know, and told him what nonsense, right? Kshatriya mentality, you know, like real, like Kshatriya, like in his blood, in the genes. Right? So it was interesting to see how a little bit of that ancient spirit was there, and what it looked like, right? Because we don't have it like that in the West, right? Not in its pure form. So Kshatriya, by nature, is somewhat of a strong nature, and can become angry. But Kshatriya specifically gets angry at injustice, not without just cause. Kshatriya is not someone with a very, very sensitive temper, and as soon as someone sneezes in his direction, there is already like thunderbolts flying back. But rather, Kshatriya means angry at injustice, not tolerating injustice, totally intolerant to injustice. So this is much more noble. So Dhruva Maharaj was specifically angry because the Yakshas, they had also not acted properly as Kshatriyas, in killing his brother, but used their tricks and their inappropriate means of dishonest means of fighting in a sense. And there was a great sense of honor among Kshatriyas to fight, right? Yes, to fight until death, but according to principles, and to fight appropriately. If a weapon would fall on the ground, then if one was fighting with a sword and his weapon would fall on the ground, the other one would also throw his sword on the ground. Not that like he would like, "Ha-ha, now, you know, I've got you, you are finished," like in the movies, right? No, he would also throw his sword on the ground. So there was a great noble spirit. So Dhruva Maharaj had this noble spirit. Dhruva Maharaj had this, had great purity in his heart. But as a Kshatriya, he was still getting very upset at injustice, and especially when it concerned his own brother. So we see two types of apparent material conditioning in Dhruva Maharaj here. We're seeing Kshatriya conditioning, which is not on the, which is within Varna Ashram, not on the transcendental state beyond Varna Ashram. And we see attachment to his brother. So how is this in a pure devotee? But we're seeing many times some family attachments in pure devotee. We're seeing, like when Yudhisthira Maharaj was taking care of Dhritarashtra, that Dhritarashtra left the palace after Vidura had sort of told him, "What are you doing here in this house? You get out of here." And he went to the forest and renounced, and he just left in the middle of the night. Yudhisthira was very upset. He was attached. When Abhimanyu was killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was heartbroken. 17-year-old son killed. Heartbroken he was. It took time to get over that. So we see many examples of family attachment impure devotees, in transcendental personalities. We even see in Srila Prabhupada how he felt very sad when a disciple would leave, and how he felt deeply touched by that. And one might say, well, you know. So we're seeing that attachments and affection are not condemned. They are natural. It is not stated that there can be no trace of these kind of attachments, right? Some attachment to a family member in a devotee. And that is a disqualification for his pure connection with Krishna. Pure devotional service means simply that we serve Krishna to such a point that Krishna is fully satisfied with our service and has accepted us, right, as his dearmost devotee. Right? And then that relationship with Krishna is so intimate and so strong that Krishna will protect. And even if some family attachment occurs, Krishna will bring the devotee somehow or other to the transcendental platform. So Krishna here inspired Svayambhuva Manu. The Manus are not ordinary personalities. The Manus are the agents of the Supreme Lord to uphold the order of the universe. The Supreme Lord has some agents who are taking care that the principles of Dharma are being maintained in the universe and that the natural order, which is there by the Supreme Lord, is kept intact. So Dhruva Maharaj was upsetting things. So Svayambhuva Manu interfered. Right? We see a similar thing when the Pachetas, they were performing austerities and went into underwater for a very long time, and they developed great power, transcendental power, by their austerities. Right? And they came out of the water, and they saw that in the time that they had been underwater, that the whole earth had been covered by trees. And by dint of their austerity, they had so much power that just from their glands, they could set fire to those trees, and they started to burn down all these forests. Right? Being angry that the whole world had turned into a jungle. Right? And then Lord Shiva came and stopped them. Right? So he also is a protector of the order, of the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. So sometimes even great transcendental personalities, Muyantiyat Suryaha, even they are bewildered by the material energy. But one who chants the holy name of the Lord constantly, right, is protected from the illusory energy. Will never fall prey to the illusory energy. Haridas Thakur never fell prey to the illusory energy, even when the illusory energy personified came. Therefore, this process of the chanting of the holy name is the most potent process for ongoing purification. It is said, yajyadanam tapascaiva pavaninam manissinam, that even the saintly personalities are purified by yajyadanas and tapas, or by sacrifice, charity, and austerity. And that they should never give up such purificatory activities. In other words, even saintly persons should engage in purificatory activities, according to Bhagavad Gita. But it is stated that, because even saintly persons can sometimes fall prey to some contamination. But, for example, another example, Maharaj Pariksit, he was a perfect devotee. It seemed Krishna from birth. He always remembered Krishna. But still it said that he became purified from the contamination of some of the Karmakanda rituals which he had performed as the emperor when he heard Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. So the most powerful means of purification is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And Haridas Thakur is the example that the illusory energy, although she came personified, could not touch him, could not by no means influence him. Haridas remained always transcendental. And Haridas knew past, present, and future. He already knew. He already knew that she would be coming. Right? So Haridev had all knowledge. We see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita descriptions how Haridas Thakur is able to explain the inner mission, the inner purpose of the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, how do you know? How do you know these things? Because ultimately transcendental knowledge is revealed within the heart. Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajana yena gata sapanta. That transcendental knowledge remains hidden within the hearts of the mahajans, and therefore one must take shelter of them. So Krishna ultimately reveals transcendental knowledge within our heart when he is pleased with our endeavors in devotional service. And therefore, there is no doubt that Dhruva Maharaj had pleased the Supreme Lord, that Dhruva Maharaj was directly under the personal care and protection of the Supreme Lord. And that is our goal. And whether then there is a little conditioning or whatever, it's very secondary. Very secondary. And we still speak of pure devotional service. I'll end with that. Any questions? Any comments?
Over to Tara. You mentioned two anarchists of Kaldurva, this attachment to brother and another was the concept you were speaking, I'm a Shakti and another.
Yeah.
So if somebody had this anarchist in this case, how to put please Krishna
or Narendra
by fighting against the
Yakshas
Asayan, I think personally it was not inspired.
No, it wasn't. No, so that's right. These anartas, they caused an act which was not pure, which was not at all devotional service, which was mundane activity. But because he had previously pleased the Supreme Lord with his devotional service, the Supreme Lord had so much goodwill that he inspired Swayambhuva Manu from within to correct him. So the Lord was protecting him due to his pure devotional service that he had performed prior to that. But no, the activity of killing the Yakshas was not devotional service at all. It was undesirable. It was understandable. And it wasn't just totally demoniac, right? Because the Yakshas had unduly, improperly killed his brother, and as a Kshatriya, he reacted to injustice. So it was understandable, but it was not pleasing to the Lord. Yes.
You mentioned Prahlad Maharaj became completely purified meeting the in comparison with Dhruva, he met Narayan.
Yeah.
How it is that he did not become
Also a good question, because he was touched by the conch shell of the Lord on his head, Dhruva Maharaj. Because when Dhruva Maharaj attained perfection, got the darshan of the Lord, then Dhruva Maharaj was trying to attain perfection. I got distracted by the conch shell. Then Dhruva Maharaj was listening. God, I'm also just, my brain is not working. Dhruva Maharaj was trying to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. But because he was very young, he could not do so. And the Supreme Lord helped him by touching him with the conch shell on his head. And then it is said that Dhruva Maharaj was able to offer prayers very nicely and eloquently. So in that way, the touch of the Lord certainly lifted Dhruva above the conditioning of being a small boy, and gave him the full ability to speak from the transcendental platform. But apparently, something was still there later on in his life in terms of some material conditioning. So how is this possible? It is only possible because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is personal. And it's not that anything in the process of receiving the mercy of the Lord is mechanical. If it would be mechanical, then one would say the touch of the Lord will produce these and these results. Right? We could make a formula and say X plus Y is, you know, Z, right? The full result, for sure. But it's not like a formula like that. It is all depending on the personal mercy of the Supreme Lord. So we see that the Lord applied his mercy in a different way with Dhruva Maharaj than he did with Prahlad Maharaj. With Dhruva Maharaj, it was stated that he was able, after he was touched, he was able to offer perfect prayers and so on. With Prahlad Maharaj, it said that he was fully purified after the touch of Lord Sringadev from all material contamination. Now we see other cases where a devotee is touched by the Supreme Lord and immediately becomes ecstatic, and becomes a great pure devotee of the Lord. But if that would be such a great pure devotee, I don't think it necessarily means there can be no trace of material contamination. In some cases, it may be there. Apparently, in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, it was there. Other explanations that are sometimes given for the apparent impurity in a devotee is simply that this is the Lila Shakti of the Lord, and that for the sake of his pastime, the Lord arranges to bewilder his devotee. And that one says that, therefore, due to it, it could be also the influence of Lila Shakti that Dhruva Maharaj was acting in this bewildered way. As a warning to us, because in one sense, Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental narration of pastimes about the relationship between the Supreme Lord and his devotees, and how they attain perfection through the process of devotional service. So maybe to teach us through Dhruva Maharaj, due to the influence of Lila Shakti, he temporarily forgot, just as Arjuna temporarily forgot, so that he could inquire from Krishna and that Krishna could speak Bhagavad Gita. So there are also such examples of Lila Shakti. So either of these possibilities are there. One, that when he was touched by the Lord, that the Lord blessed him in one way, but not all impurity was removed. Or the other is that by the touch of the Lord, all impurity was removed. He was perfect. But later, in this issue with the yakshas, due to the Lila Shakti of the Lord, he was a little bit covered, so that this pastime could take place. Yes.
You mentioned about pure devotee that
He is not important. That he is not? I missed some words. Pure devotee, and then I missed it.
It's not important that he is free from all anarthas, but that he is 100% attached to the Lord.
Yeah.
And, I was wondering how is it
possible that somebody is wondering if he's disturbed by that?
Well, okay. The 100% engagement in the service of the Lord is at least in his activities. So he's not disturbed by the anarthas. Being disturbed by anarthas, because disturbance, the word disturbed has a connotation of interruption. No? So we might think disturbed, when something disturbs us, it tends to, there are two elements to disturbance. One is distraction and interruption. So certainly the disturbance, whatever was there from the anarthas, the effect was not that there was an interruption of the service, that there was, and not even a distraction. The pure devotee still remains fixed on pure devotional service, but possibly it will influence the intensity in which a devotee may engage in that pure devotional service. And therefore, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, for example, a distinction is made between pure devotees and confidential devotees, right? Where it is stated that the confidential devotees are, they are aware of their eternal spiritual bodies. They are in antaranga seva, in eternal service to, in internal service to Krishna. They are already living in the spiritual world, although they are here in their material bodies and so on. So I think that in such prema bhaktas, we don't find a trace of material contaminations, just as in the example of the sages of Naimisa, of Dandakaranya that I gave. They were in bhava, but later came to Prem as gopis, to full Prem. They were already in topmost bhava and practically in the stage of Prem. But that was still further perfected in the pastimes. So we see like that sometimes, that the Prem in a devotee is further developed in the pastimes. So I guess when I said 100% devotional service, we'll classify it as 100% on different levels, either 100% at least in activity, or 100% in activity and in consciousness, and like that we can make some distinction. But still it's 100%. Yes.
I remember about the prayer of Dromacher. After he was touched by Gonshav, he was praying to the Lord that he attains a throne.
That he, so cannot hear that he attains a what?
Throne.
A throne. Okay.
And that also his brother dies, that his brother gets killed. And then later, when his brother was killed, he was actually angry at himself that he, because he, in the meantime, he got purified. And then he started to kill his yakshas, and he was killing them. Many. And at one point, I remember that Guevara appeared, and he tried to pacify because he's pure devotee. Explanations are there how we should act and what we should be aware that we don't curse, that we don't ask for some benediction in return which later shouldn't be terrible for us, and that we can regret them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember that how some order.
Good.
It was always interesting.
Yeah. I don't remember. I don't remember these details because I don't have such a good memory. But it's nice. But it's good. Thank you for that. It's very difficult to know what to do. Therefore, one must always take shelter of superior authority. And that's an element in the whole thing. That Swayambhu Vimanu came to advise Dhruva Maharaj, and he listened to Swayambhu Vimanu. So, superior authority can help us when things get very bewildering, what to do, what not to do. Anyone else?
How about this Luj at the end of
the... maybe I'm deaf today, but Luj?
The
Well, but then then you are really like sort of going in the mood of the Adunikavat approach, you know, that paper that has been written by Sukhavak, which is establishing a concept that there is a mythological aspect to the Bhagavatam and a spiritual aspect to the Bhagavatam, right? So there is a school of thought like that, but Srila Prabhupada took every word of Bhagavatam as transcendental. So, but it is true that that an acharya, that he, when it comes to essential spiritual instructions relating to the truth in regards to the process of devotional service to Krishna. Yeah. There, things are very clear. And when it comes to some technicalities on the functioning of things, sometimes the acharyas have differences of opinion, and sometimes we see quite some radical differences. Right? Bala, there's those, I can't remember them all right now, I wrote them down, but you know, memory is such a thing, but you may remember that there is, Baladev Vijayabhusan pointed out the faults in Madhavacharya's understanding, and if I remember it well, in one of his points was that Lakshmi was jiva tattva. That's correct, huh? Yeah, the Lakshmi is jiva tattva. You know, it's like, well, you know, we go like, but that, you know, that's not a small thing, right? That's like big, you know. That's like no longer a little deluge, you know. That's a major. Okay, I didn't want to put the label, but that's at least something significant. How is it possible? Anyway, such things are also going on, you know, and we're not going to question the transcendental position of Madhavacharya. Right? Some might, of course, try to get into the thing, well, but Madhavacharya didn't fully know Krishna. Right? Okay, but he didn't fully know Lakshmi either. It's like, to an extent, not even a little bit, apparently. You know, if that's a huge mistake. And yet, it's overlooked, right? In a sense. in another sense, is overlooked. It just definitely is pointed out by Baladevija Pujan, but on another level, it's overlooked. They're just going there straight in our sampradaya, you know, and we go Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vyas, Madhava. There we go. Straight in our, straight in our Brahma Sampradaya. We are the Sri Sri Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So it's there, you know, so sometimes we're looking at things which can make the mind spin. But we're seeing that the Vaishnavas, on the one hand, are very strict, and on the other hand, when the bhakti is really there, right? When the bhakti is there, then there's also some broad-mindedness, right? In overlooking things, overlooking the rabbits on the moon when the bhakti is there. Finito. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.